deal with it in the absence of crime intelligence. As said earlier, they are before the Joint Standing Committee, but will be able to deal with the issues before us. Yeah.
Honourable Chair, thank you. We will follow the same procedure in terms of the breakdown of the budget and then also looking at the indicators that are associated with the specific program. Program for crime intelligence within this is the second last program in SAPS. It's got two sub-programs. The one is for crime intelligence operations and the second one is intelligence and information management. The purpose associated with the program is to manage crime intelligence, analyze crime information and provide technical support for investigators and crime prevention operations. Chair, the next slide refers to the budget breakdown. I assume that is reference was made to the previous presentation or part of the presentation that there was a slide missing. I indicated this morning that we've moved this slide from the first part of the presentation down to the relevant programs. So the program for crime intelligence expenditure estimates, as I indicated, there is your two programs, crime intelligence operations and intelligence information management. The total budget allocation 2016-17 amounted to 3.3 billion, and that's 1.3 billion for intelligence operations and 1.9 billion for intelligence information management, and that increases to 3.5 billion in 2017-18 with 1.4 billion in crime intelligence operations and 2.1 billion in intelligence information management. The purpose of the program I've already indicated in the previous slide. As far as this specific program is concerned, the compensation payments are usually the largest portion of the specific program. The operational costs associated with the program are primarily fuel, your fleet, maintenance, travel and subsistence as generated by personnel. And it's also important to note that what is in the figures that are included there in the slide exclude the Secret Service account because that is not part of vote 23 for police. As far as the program is concerned, we monitored eight indicators in the previous financial year, of which we achieved seven at the end of the third quarter and one not achieved. And the specific problematic indicator at the time was the vetting of personnel. That in terms of the identified personnel, the target was set at 60% of those employees need to be vetted, but we only achieved 37.15% of the targeted personnel. The strategic objective associated with the program itself to gather crime intelligence in support of the prevention, combating and investigation of crime. The first indicator that associated with the sub-program crime intelligence operations is to conduct intelligence operations to address prioritized crime threats, and the number of network operations conducted, the target has been set at 876. Then we've added a number of new indicators to the intelligence program, and the strategic objective associated with this slide is to collate, evaluate, analyze, coordinate, and disseminate intelligence for the purpose of tactical, operational, and strategic utilization. The objective statement is to provide intelligence reports in support of proactive SAPS operations relating to the following: threat and risk assessments and early warning reports. And the performance indicators that we are using is the first one is the number of threat and risk assessment reports generated for proactive policing operations, and then the number of early warning reports generated for proactive policing operations, and then lastly the percentage of proactive intelligence reports that were physically operationalized. Now, the performance indicators that we've introduced are to address the recommendations by PCOP emanating from the 2015-16 BRRR that a more qualitative approach needs to be adopted in the measurement of crime intelligence. So as the first step in this direction, Chair, we've added these indicators to start looking at what percentage of the intelligence reports that were generated were then actually operationalized, first of all, in the proactive or the prevention of crime. They also provide intelligence reports in support of proactive support. Next indicator is to gather in crime intelligence in support of the prevention, combating and investigation of crime. Conduct security assessments within SAPS relating to the following: vetting investigations finalized for prioritized environments, and in your information communication technology security assessments and physical security assessments. Now, the number of vetting investigations finalized for prioritized environments in relation to the applications received, our targets is 1,154. And then the percentage of ICT security assessments finalized as per the annual assurance schedule, 100 of those on the schedule needs to be conducted. As far as the amendments are concerned, the objective statement was amended. It previously read, conduct security assessments within the South African Police Service. We've broken that down into more detail, identifying the specific prioritized areas. As far as the performance indicators on vetting is concerned, we've changed that to include the vetting investigations finalized for the specific prioritized environments in relation to the applications received. And then lastly, the percentage of ICT security assessments finalized has been included. We included reference to the annual assurance schedule. Then the percentage of physical security assessments finalized per physical security annual assurance schedule, that's also 100%. In the past, we only referred to the number of physical security assessments finalized, and now we've included as part of the description that it must be in line with the physical security annual assurance schedule. The next strategic objective talks to the collate, evaluate, analyze, coordinate, and disseminate intelligence for the purpose of tactical operational strategic utilization for the sub-program intelligence and information management. This one talks to the provide intelligence reports in support of reactive SAPS operations relating to the following. So this is specifically focused at the investigative part or the investigative responsibility in SAPS. It talks to profiles and intelligence analysis reports. The tactical intelligence reports generated reactive SAPS operations, the profiles, a target is set at 98,277, and intelligence analysis reports at 141,423. Previously, the indicator referred to a number of intelligence reports. This has now been consolidated into a specific target for that environment, or consolidated into one single performance indicator. And then also, one of the indicators that we've added to start assessing the impact of this operation talks to the percentage of reactive intelligence reports that were operationalized. And this is also the same explanation as the previous one. This was introduced in line with the recommendations by PCOP emanating from the previous BRRR that we need to adopt a more qualitative approach as far as crime intelligence is concerned. So also, as far as the reactive side is concerned, this is the first step in that direction. So this indicator has been added for both the proactive intelligence products and the reactive intelligence products so that we can start measuring which one or what percentage of these products actually resulted in or have actually been operationalized. Then strategic intelligence products, the number of strategic intelligence products provided to NICOC priorities, that is target is set at 22. Then to prevent the fight against crime to enhance international cooperation innovation on police and security matters, this basically relates to the Interpol relation. To promote mutual assistance and cooperation between SAPS and other national and international law enforcement agencies, to reduce transnational crime by facilitating cross-border operations, facilitating the arrest of identified transnational crime suspects, generating of global threat assessment reports, and generating of persons of interest reports. The first indicator is the percentage of cross-border operation facilitated in relation to requests received. Our target has been set at 100% of the requests that are received need to be addressed. And the performance indicators, they were removed from the 2016-17 APP, but it was reintroduced now with 2017-18 as the Division Crime Intelligence considered their measurement to be important. The indicators were previously located within Program 3, the DPCI. However, the function was moved to Program 4, Crime Intelligence, during 2016-2017. That also refers to the percentage of arrest of identified transnational crime suspects facilitated in relation to the request received, and our target is that 100% of the request received of this nature needs to be attended to. The number of global threat assessments generated for SAP's operations, there's 4 of them that needs to be done, and the number of persons of interest reports generated for SAP's operations, there's 4 of them as well. This performance these two performance indicators were introduced to address the recommendations by PCOP emanating from the previous BRRR that a more qualitative approach must be adopted as far as this program is concerned. Indicators that were removed, from the chair and members of the committee, there's only 2 of them. It talks to the number of inquiries conducted and the number of tactical operationals conducted. I believe that the National Commissioner and the will also indicate why this was removed, but specifically when we talk to the number of inquiries, these numbers actually amounts to tens of thousands, because all specific investigations, all inquiries needs to be registered, so it's not actually a very good indicator of the activities within that crime intelligence environment. Updates that we've done, it just talks to what I've already presented, the intelligence operations to address prioritized crime threat. The MTSF target 4,271, it emphasizes the important role of intelligence-led police activities that contributes towards the prevention and successful crime investigation. This will assist SAPS and government in neutralizing the crime threat as well as enhancing investigations and ensuring the safety and security of all people in South Africa. Providing intelligence products in support of proactive policing activities, and then also to provide intelligence reports in support of reactive SAPS operating operational activities. These are 2 new performance indicators that we've introduced. The target has been set, as indicated, the 109,612 and 726,340. And as indicated, this is also part of our interventions, or the justification is linked to the fact that it's introduced to ensure that we have sufficient intelligence available as far as the proactive and reactive operations are concerned. And this is also linked to the strategic outcome-orientated goals 1, 2, and 3 as reflected in the MTSF. Strategic intelligence to NICOC, the MTSF target over the period is 120. It's also linked to the same explanation that I provided on the previous edition. And the vetting investigations that needs to be done has also been added in terms of the prioritized environments, the ICT security assessments that needs to be done, and physical security assessment. And the inclusion of this focuses on enhancing integrity management capability of the department and further seeks to reduce the risk of corruption. So that is linked to the strategic outcome goal 4 in the MTSF. And then lastly, there's one that's left with, that comes from the previous slide, 100% of physical security assessment that needs to be done. And then lastly, the amendments that we've done as far as the Interpol relations are concerned, that talks to the promotion of mutual assistance and cooperation between SAPS and other international law enforcement agencies. The targets, the MTSF targets, refers to the fact that we will attend to 100% of the operations that needs to be facilitated, the arrest of identified suspects, as well as the compilation of global threat assessment reports and reports on persons of interest. And this objective is intended to enhance the relationship between the SAPS and other law enforcement agencies, and it's also linked to the strategic outcome-orientated goal 2 associated with the medium-term strategic framework. Chairperson, thank you. That concludes Program 4.
Thank you for that report. Members, we will go to questions. I'll pose the first 3. Then we'll go to Honourable Abatsi. The first question is the nature of the work in this environment. It's very much labour-incentred in terms of you need staff, you need personnel. Now, if you look at the crime environment, transactional, international, crime is one of our serious risks. Now, is SAPS closing down some of its posts in other jurisdictions? And isn't it a negative approach if you close down posts with the capability then of dealing with issues proactively from that jurisdiction? So I've just got a concern there. Then the second issue relates to the cluster's involvement in dealing with the management of intelligence in some of the jurisdictions. Some of the stations that we saw this morning that's been targeted now by this TRIO team that's been instituted, I mean, I've been informed that some of those priority areas, they don't got enough staff from CI side really to deal with the serious crimes, and that is areas where we see a lot of heists, a lot of break-ins and so on. So I just wonder, is there a shift in terms again of resources to those targeted stations that we saw this morning? And then of course, again the important question, we also asked it for General Vieja, and again the issue of the head of CI, where are we in terms of the process? Honourable Mbatsi.
Thank you, Chair. The two performance indicators that are removed, namely number of inquiries conducted and number of tactical operations conducted, can we get an explanation why they were removed? Because from what General Ravi said, I'm not convinced. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is, 60% of employees vetted. What about 40%? What are they going to? When are they going to be vetted? And what are the reasons for not vetted? Slide 70. Provide the objective statement, provide strategic intelligence product to NICOC. The target, I don't know if the target is 22 or what. Was this target achieved or not? Because the numbers, I don't understand. Others, they have said 100% or what, so I want to know, in all those numbers, 22, was the target at 22, was it achieved or not? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Janet, I think this is a good example. If you look at the theory and what we received in terms of performance and targets, it looks very good. I mean, quarterly targets, there's only one, and that's a vetting issue that they have to comply to. And they have the 100% performance targets. It's very good. But when we get to the practical situation, Chairperson, I want to make a statement, and I say that I don't think crime intelligence is up to standard. And then let me use Collini again. That is one example. Totally unprepared in certain senses as far as crime intelligence is concerned. Even if you look at earlier some xenophobic uprisings again, the intelligence was not up to standard. And I'm talking about crime intelligence. I don't even want to talk about national intelligence, or what's now the security agency of South Africa, South African Security Agency. But my question is, the Chairperson, to make it short and sweet, can we get an update on the head of crime intelligence from the Commissioner of Police?
Thank you. Honourable Shlongu.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chairperson. No, General, you know, I think with regard to this, in fact, I'll be very frank, you know, because it worries me, you know. You know, it reminds me somewhere, I think it was early 2009, when it was said that there is a threat against the life of the president, finally, or is a white hope in death. Oh, there is a white hope. Why now this thing? But I'm just looking at this thing, this recent hype around head spokesperson of the hawks going live on television and making everybody to, and we have intelligence-driven program. Find one man, not even carrying a bullet, Jesus Christ, what kind of a coup? Yeah. Now, you know, in other countries, that such as the head of crime intelligence would have been booted out completely, right from square one. You cannot actually then raise such a hype of the nation and only to find the man just living in a shack and who wrote a letter to requesting money to kill. Then you just get it. But are the people going to take our security services seriously in the country, or is it just going to be said because it undermines national sovereignty and integrity of the country as a whole? You get the brigadier on a man who resides in a shack. And he was writing a letter. Oh, now you just say, but this thing, it is this thing, General, that I'm just saying, we need to be somehow careful. And I was just saying to myself, even only if police were to make a hullabaloo about this man living in a shed, yet money is not even stolen, money taken from the airport, a highly secured area. And the head of intelligence could not even say that there is this airliner landing here at such a time. There must be a risk for it to be hit. And then EU units are then activated to say there is a possibility here. What I'm just saying, Jefferson, you see, these are the things that I at times just feel that when you wake up in the morning, can you say that really we are saved, or maybe we are saved because of the mercy of God who has just been merciful to us to say that we may need to be alive? You cannot, you know, we are from London. When we landed, we were told that these people, when you land at Heathrow, they have seen you 10 times before you come even to the first customs officer. They have seen you and they have analyzed you and they have processed you from the high chain command of their security services. With us, then you just get, they've taken money from the airport. And one man, who stays in a shack. In the South African Parliament ought to have convened a special meeting, according to me. Because that thing is like, even the investor somewhere, a coup in South Africa. Oh, there is a man living in a shack. No. It's not on, Jefferson. It's really not on. Even if Brigadier Mamda was playing politics, no, but you can't really with that thing, man. What is it? That is why then, General, I was just saying that I was just thinking, really, is this the kind of intelligence, or maybe our intelligence, because of the political mayhem in the country? If the political mayhem in the country does have an impact on you, because the reality person, I cannot actually then move away from myself. One of my senior friends here was saying that, hey, no, we have got a serious problem here, because the political squabbles that are taking place in the country are affecting. The tensions are very high, boiling to the head within the intelligence services of the country. Is it so? If it is like that, then at the end of the day, even our committee, we have tried as this committee chairperson to respect you, to say, because we are dealing with security services of the country and taking the national interests of the country, putting it first, we must move away from narrow political partisanship, so that we can actually be able to find each other. But if the hand security services themselves are actually doing things like this, and it is in that particular context, Chairperson, I think it will be prudent for me to raise this for the first time. When General Mzuli was said to have written an open letter to the President to say, if you guarantee me in my position here, I will guarantee you, continuing as a president, I just said, Jesus, only God will have to come and save this country, if and only if you can have a situation like this in this country, within the security arms of the state,
And how would you expect other bureaucrats to deal with this? Because I am told that that man though is actually suspended. He has got an undue influence within the security structure of this country. Thank you.
Thank you, Member. Honorable Robert Lakhani.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair and the General for the presentation. Just a few clarity questions, General. I would, I think generally we can see that something is being done. But always my worry is the capacity. The capacity and the footprint. If we were to make a proposal around this for us to support the police around this, what would be that recommendation? I'm asking this question because the issue of success by and large is the flip side of the coin of the capacity and capabilities and ability of a good intelligence, crime intelligence information. That's really the question I'm asking, because then I can narrow it down, but I don't want to do that. I could narrow it down to say, if you look at what happened at O.R. Tambo, just as an example, or what happened there, clearly can send a signal that there is a gap around the collection part, the information part. And therefore, what then becomes a solution to that problem, given that you are all practitioner of this particular aspect? Because if we don't really beef up their capacity, then we'll always come second best around this particular area. So that's a general question I'm asking. And I know that then the second thing is that I wanted to just to ask, when you look at the targets is a good target number, but now I just want to ask this question. When you read your targets, some targets are almost look like a number, and some targets are interchangeably percentage. Now I ask the question, one side I read a number, and one side I read a percentage. What would be a percentage of what that I'm reading? Because if we use the number and percentage interchangeably, then I get lost in the process. I may be reading it wrongly, but is it not a way that it can be written in such a way that you can also see, if you are looking at a percentage, you can also see the numbers? Because if I look at this page I'm having here, it's got a number and it's got a percentage. So which one is it? Because I think it's also a question of reliability of what we want to see. At the end of the day, we look at the achievement. We look at it on the basis of the percentage or numbers. So that the other question has been asked already, and I know it's late in the afternoon, Chair. And let me pause there for now, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Roman Bija. Yeah, maybe one technical point. I don't want to belabor the point, but I think once again the lack of a technical indicator description in terms of some of the performance.
CID question has been coming through from day one. We commit we are going to try our best to deliver a document by Friday. The issue work which has been done in that regard. Maybe before I even get to the CI, there were some outstanding questions that the chair raised on the taxes. And maybe just going back, Honorable Groenewald, the total number of personnel within the detective services environment stands now at 27,637. Now, this is everyone in the detective services environment. 24,473 are people that are employed in terms of the Police Act. That will also include the command structure in that environment. And people that are appointed in terms of the Public Service Act, so that is more support staff or general support, 3,164. So what may be a question is how many of these 24,000 are actual detectives at station level, Chair? 19,142 of the number that I've mentioned, the 24,000, will be those that do investigation work at station. And we've got about 324 of them who are at cluster level. 4,071 of them in specialized units all over, provincial level, and so on. That in short the numbers when it comes to the detectives. And then, Chair, the question relating to training. For this financial year that we are in, a total of 390 training programs are planned for the detectives, and it is envisaged that a total of 7,479 people will undergo training, and that training, the 390 that I'm talking of, it ranges from the basic detective training, the short detective program, the computer system related detective commanders course, vehicle subs, the ROC, or the resolving of crime training, and so on. So this is in broad the training related to the detectives. On the vehicles, Chair, we on average must talk to a ratio of 1:2. That is for operational work in the detective services environment. And just for interest sake, in the financial year that we are coming from, 90 million was spent from the CJS to procure additional vehicles for the detectives. In environment. Yeah, I think that takes care of the issues relating to the detectives. And maybe let me deal with one issue also relating to the capacity of crime intelligence. It was visible in yesterday's presentation that we have got an actual of 7,975 people in the crime intelligence environment. Now, directly, Chair, let me deal with the issue that the Honorable Ramatlakane raised, and he spoke to it earlier, and it is coming up again. And I will also deal with the issue by Honorable Groenewald. While we have people from the crime intelligence environment on all levels deployed, we can never be satisfied with the numbers. That's what Honorable Ramatlakani talked to the footprint. We can't be satisfied with the numbers, particularly when you are looking at those areas that are challenged. You will want to have much more numbers than what we currently have. Secondly, in relation to the numbers, we must not be satisfied to hear we have got 7,975 people in that environment. We must begin to ask ourselves a question of how competent are they in doing that job. And I'm responding in this manner, Honourable Chair, because it's an issue that we ourselves are beginning to raise with crime intelligence, and is going to enjoy prominence in this financial year. To say some people have been in that environment for far too long, you know, in that they have passed, if you can call it sell-by date, as in their efficiency and effectiveness has become a problem, which requires some redeployment from the environment so that we can open up, because we are not going to grow in numbers. So for us to be able to get what we want, we need to refresh that particular environment. And I think it is provided for in the plan. I had to force them this year to move the targets. For example, one of their targets was it is expected of a handler to at least have 3 informers. And my point is I have more informers than you, but I'm not in that particular environment. So you can't talk of 3 while your business is to ensure that you establish a network, we are able to generate intelligence. When I said that, I think they came back and said they are increasing it, although it's going to be difficult to fall. I said, you still have done nothing. So for starters in this year, I imposed a double number to say, you will go from 4 to 8. But it must also just be, I raise my hand and I say I've got 8 informers. What value are they adding in the environment? Because there is a lot that goes to those people. So I'm simply saying, Chair, the concern is a valid concern, but it's a situation that we are not going to be spectators around, that we are going to put an effort. I think Honorable Groenewald used Colini as an example, because it's one of those recent ones. But also Honorable Ramatlakani uses the OR Tambo incident. The OR, it's given that it was an act of which was well organized. So in that network, is it impossible to have done some infiltration so that you in advance know there is this mobility? I earlier said, if you look at some instances in KwaZulu-Natal, there is an element of interception. So there would have been planned action by the gangs, either to go and do a heist and so on. And information becomes available, which enables a proactive operation. And they are either prevented from carrying out or executing their plan, or they are intercepted in that process. So it is a valid concern around this area, Chair, but I will plead for space and do what is necessary, and maybe we could be called to an accounting later. What support, Honorable Ramatlakane, when people come running and saying we are being moved out of the environment, we must not be crucified. Because one of the things that we are trying to achieve is the re-engineering of that environment so that it can give us a little bit more in that area. And I think, in a way, Honorable Mkhongo, this one man who's going to topple us issue is responded to. I will want to leave it there. I think you have raised it in a manner that it has been raised. We spoke to it earlier. I think Honorable Mulevati raised the question, here is this person. There is halabaloo about him, regime change or whatever, goes to court and something comes out. And as I said, it's a matter that we may tomorrow with the DPCI go a little bit into it. So if I'm allowed, let me not talk a lot on it. In terms of what we have tasked them in the trio plan, I think General Cruz and General Magadela will know that our success in the implementation of the trio plan is highly dependent on intelligence, and there is work which has been done just in one area. I have also called for what must be tabled as the crime intelligence strategy, so that we can know what is it that we are pursuing in that area. Che, you spoke about the closing down of posts. I'm not so sure when we talk about the close down of posts, but what I simply know is that we are not going to take away any of the posts from the environment. It is maybe the reorganization and the making sure that the posts go to the requisite level in that environment. And again, where, for example, posts have been advertised and they were maybe not filled, the process will be performed further during the year. Cluster involvement with CI, especially around the issues of capacity check, I think it links a little bit to the question of Honorable Ramatlakane in terms of the footprint and so on. We have that capacity, national, provincial cluster, to some extent with the CIOs at station level, but with some agents doing work down at station level. The General Mluli Meta Chair, the criminal case is still before the courts. There is not yet an outcome in that regard. In as far as the disciplinary matter is concerned, the latest I have is that there is communication with the representatives, his legal representatives, and for a day now in June. There is a day that is being agreed to for June this year, and the matter will unfold. So as we speak, he remains not at work until we have got the outcome of that particular process. 60%, I don't think. Oh, then you see. Oh, he remains on suspension. Yes, Honorable Chair, that's the case. Because I think the suspension process is provided up to, what is it, 90 days. Beyond that, the suspension, if it is without benefit, it must be uplifted because it's considered an unfair labor practice pending the finalization of the matters.
If the disciplinary, the internal disciplinary hearing finds him guilty, will it affect his salary?
Honorable Chair, that is dependent on the outcome. If the outcome is, for example, a dismissal, a sanction of a dismissal, and that is affected, then the salary stops, and then he gets whatever is due to him in terms of the rules of the game. But yeah, it will have an impact. Again, I know, Leon, you tried to pass this one over to me on the question that the Honorable Chair raised, indicators removed. There was a question, I think it was raised by Honorable Mulaya. She asked the question on the two indicators that have been removed.
Thank you. The first one relates to the products. Let's get to that specific indicator. My apologies. Yeah, the number of inquiries conducted and the number of tactical operations conducted. We had a, when we met with management to sit and decide which of the indicators we have to include. Now, the number of inquiries conducted, everything that is dealt with within crime intelligence, from the simplest requests to the more complicated ones, are initially registered as an inquiry. And some of those are very simplistic activities that they need to execute. And as I indicated, some of them are results in very complicated investigations. The point that I'm trying to make is everything that they do are dealt with as inquiries. And the argument was that this can amount to tens of thousands or even 100,000 of these type of inquiries that are registered. And it does not really add any value in terms of monitoring that, because it's just an indication of how many inquiries they're dealt with. And these inquiries do not necessarily result in intelligence products. Some of these inquiries are closed on the same day. It's a short inquiry about check on the telephone number of this. They do that inquiry and the file is closed and it's over and done with. That's the reason why the request from intelligence, crime intelligence, was that we remove that indicator and not continue to monitor. They will monitor it on that specific level, at AOP level, but it's not on the APP level as a strategic indicator of importance that we need to measure at this specific level. So we can continue to report on the number of inquiries that they dealt with if that information is required, and give the information through in terms of a narrative or in addition to the information that we supply on the APP. It's it's a pity that General Makele is not here to explain in more detail, relevant detail, exactly why that is. Why we can exclude that specific indicator. Makele, the acting head of... No, Makele.
Right, other responses?
Thank you, Chair. Leon, I also wanted you to deal with the issue that Honorable Ramatlakane raised, the last one, the targets expressed in numbers and percentage.
I believe, Honorable Chair, that relates to the targets that has been set in the crime intelligence environment. Now, where applicable and where we can determine specific targets, the targets are expressed as concrete numbers. So in some indicators, we use concrete numbers because we can do a prediction or we can do a forecast on the numbers that we want to deliver in terms of that specific indicators. So if, for instance, in terms of your early warning reports, based on historical evidence and historical data, we determined a concrete number, in this case 21,720 products that we want to put on the table. Then we have other indicators that we express as a percentage. For instance, the percentage of proactive intelligence reports that were operationalized. The target is set at the percentage, 100%. That means that all the products, the target that we want to achieve is that all proactive intelligence products, 100% of them, must be operationalized. At the end of the day, when we do reporting, we will express that in concrete numbers, where we will indicate that 10,000 of proactive intelligence reports were generated by the crime intelligence environment, and all of them, or 100% of them, were then operationalized within that specific environment. The same applies to, for instance, in terms of the ICT security assessment finalized as per the ICT annual assurance schedule. The annual assurance schedule makes provision for the number of assessments that needs to be done, and the target is then set at 100%. That means everything that appears on the schedule needs to be assessed within that specific financial year. The intelligence, the same applies to, if you look at the reactive operational products, the profiles, the intelligence analysis reports, we have the baseline information to set concrete numbers. But when you get to the operationalized, the percentage, the target is set at 100%. What we could have done is we could have said 100 out of 100 needs to be, or 10,000 out of 10,000 needs to be operationalized. But in this case, it's more appropriate to express it as a percentage that said everything that we produce needs to be operationalized. And then in some indications, if you look, for instance, Honorable Chair, at the international relations, the Interpol issues, there we can only express the targets as 100% because we don't know at the moment how many requests will be received. But the target is set that all requests, in all these instances, whether it's your cross-border operations or the crime suspects that needs to be arrested, the target is set at 100% because what we want to do is that all of the requests that we have received must be attended to. But at the moment, we do not know how many requests, but the 100% of what is received needs to be attended to. That's why some of the targets are set as percentages and some of them as concrete numbers. But when we report, we will report in concrete numbers.
Follow up, Honorable Ramatlakane.
I'm listening quite general. So it can be 100% or nothing. So, yeah, okay. It's actually 100% or nothing in that argument. But let me leave it there. It's for the committee to pursue the matter further, but I just think it's,
Honorable Shlomo, also follow up?
Yes, no, Chairperson, this one is directed to you. Maybe you will assist. Because with us, when it comes to the intelligence-related matters, my understanding is that we just deal with the purely rudimentary areas of it. But the finer details of it being locked within the ethics committee of parliament and all that, which to me, I must say, with greater confidence and conviction now, seems to be that itself. Because nothing of this nature can happen when we have got people who can hold this thing and actually ensure that systems are in place. Because we are just going to raise concerns, but at the end of the day, we have got no authority to actually get into that because it's a closed door. Even if we can call them here, they are just going to tell us because we are an unvetted component of parliament, then they cannot divulge things as if maybe they are holding too much big things when they are holding nothing.
No, I agree from an oversight perspective it's problematic, but I mean that is the current structure and that's maybe an issue we can talk about in the future. Other responses?
Honourable Chair, I think there's just one question that Honourable Ramatlakane raised, but before that, it can't be zero, what? Zero, 100% of zero, Honourable Chair, because there will always be work done in that particular regard, and if it were to be zero, then it will be unfair to spend money on zero. But the question that Honourable Ramatlakane, I think, raised, which is not responded to the growth, is there a shift, for example, in capacitating and so on? Amongst others, when you look at the budget growth, there is from 1 year to the other, that growth is in investment. 16-17, a 5.5% increase. 16-17, a 7.5% increase. And in this current financial year, it's a 7.5% increase. But we will want that increase also to be reflected in performance, in the quality of intelligence that we are gathering in that area, so that we are not sitting with surprises. And the Honourable Muller's question on the 60%, what about the other 40%? This 60% is solely informed by the fact that we are behind with the vetting and that certain environments are prioritized, and for starters to get to the 60% and we'll push it up as we grow with the capacity. It's an area, Chair, that I spoke to earlier to say we will look at it. And then the last question of Honourable Muller was on slide 70 in respect of the strategic intelligence. Yes, that target gets achieved in the way that they do with the intelligence community. That takes care of the issues, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, any other questions on this program? I've got just one final question. I think at one briefing with the previous minister, there was indication to kind of improve the counterintelligence capability of SAPS and also reporting lines. I just want to know, is that project running off the ground? Is it making impact?
Honourable Chair, the counterintelligence is not fully capacitated, but we have went ahead with the appointment of people in that particular structure. Once it is fully capacitated, we'll advise the honourable members accordingly. But it is the numbers are within what I was communicating.
Right, thank you very much. I think just that one other recommendation we also should make as a committee is again the issue of vetting, very important going forward. Right, we come then to the last program, Program 5, Protection and Security Services. General Bahlani.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. By the way, I forgot earlier to introduce those that are responsible for Program 3. In that case, it was Lieutenant General Nkomo, the Divisional Commissioner Detective Services, and behind me is Major General Ngoka, who is also standing in for the Acting Divisional Commissioner of Forensic Services. And for this program, intelligence, I would have pretended to be intelligence because they are currently the Joint Standing Committee, And for program 5, we have Lieutenant General Sitone, the Divisional Commissioner of Protection and Security Services. We were to be joined by Major General Zaza, the head of Presidential Protection Unit, but with the World Economic Forum in Durban, we opted to keep him there for General Sitole to join us. So together we will talk to both. I will, with your permission, Chair, request General Ravi to run the presentation.
Lord Chair, thank you. This is the last program, very short one. There's not been significant changes or amendments to the program compared to what happened to what was presented in the previous financial year. Within the Program 5, Protection and Security Services, we have sub-programs, VIP Protection, Static Protection, the Government Security Regulator and Physical Security Compliance, and the purpose associated with the program is to provide protection and security services to all identified dignitaries and government interests. As far as the expenditure estimates is concerned, when it comes to the program Protection and Security Services, it totaled in the previous financial year 2016-17 on 2.6 billion. That has now increased to 2.8 billion in the 2017-18 financial year. Within the VIP Protection Services, it was 1.2 million. It goes up to 1.4 million. Billion, 1.2 billion and 1.4 billion. And then Static Security was 956 million. It is going up to 998 million. Government Security Regulator, 124 million, going up to 133 million. And then Operational Support, 254 million, going up to 270 million. The purpose of the program I have referred to in the previous slide. The VIP Protection Services provides for the protection of the President, the Deputy President, former Presidents, their spouses, and other identified dignitaries while in transit. Static and mobile security provides for the protection of other local and foreign dignitaries and the places in which all dignitaries, including persons related to the President and Deputy President, are present. And compensation, as far as this program is concerned, is the prominent element for all protection security functions with significant overtime costs and then the travel and subsistence costs associated with this specific program is also very prominent. We are monitoring 7 indicators as far as Program 5 is concerned. At the last assessment in quarter 3, 6 of the indicators we did achieve the targets that were set. One indicator we did not achieve, and that relates to 100% of national key points to be evaluated, but as far as I know, we've actually then achieved this at the end of the financial year or at the end of the fourth quarter. Going into the detail of the indicators associated with the program, the strategic objective, the first one is to minimize security violations by protecting foreign and local prominent people and securing strategic interests. The objective statement, provision of in-transit protection. The performance indicator that we monitor is the percentage of protection provided to VIPs and that we would not, at the end of the day, would have to any security breaches. That means 100% protection provided is the target. Then the percentage of protection provided at identified government installations and identified VIP residences, the same target applies. 100% protection needs to be provided without any security breaches. The sub-program Government Security Regulator, the regulation of physical security in identified government buildings and strategic installations. The percentage of national key points to be evaluated, that target is set at 100%. There is a total of 196 national key points to be evaluated. As far as the strategic installations that we need to audit, the target is set at 49% of the identified installations. That amounts to 125 from a total of 255 that needs to be audited in the current financial year. Provision of in-transit protection, this is now a sub-program VIP protection, percentage of, this is protection and security services. The previous ones that I referred to was for presidential, I'm still with protection and security services. the IP protection provided without security breaches, 100% protection provided without security breaches, and the static protection percentage of protection provided at identified government installations and VIP residences, the target is also set at 100%. Now, the targets as far as the VIP protection and the static protection is concerned, that relates to both protection and security services as well as presidential protection, is set at 100%. The regulation of physical security in identified government buildings, the percentage of national key points evaluated that relates to the presidential protection is set at 100%, and that is 11 national key points to be evaluated. Chair, that concludes. There was no changes, etc. So that concludes Program 5. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Members, let's go to questions. Honourable Molibatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is regarding the issue of the former AU Chairperson. Does she qualify for protection? My second one, what is the situation regarding the Free State Office of VIP Protection? Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Mamula.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to open the slide 84. Percentage of strategic installation audited 49%. 125 from a total of 255. Where are the other 130 going to be audited, and why they were not audited? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Groval.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to ask a question about the former chairperson of the AU, Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. Besides the question asked by the Honourable Molibatsi about does she qualify, I also want to know what is the criteria. But not for, only for to qualify for the protection, but can I say the force, or can I actually say the component of protection? In her case, we saw that there were three vehicles involved in the protection of the said individual. I'm not aware of the fact that even if you qualify, that you get that sort of protection. And then I also want to ask, what are the guidelines that if a person qualifies for VIP protection, about the activities of that person, meaning if Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma was in such danger, how then that she can go and attend public meetings, mass meetings, and the police have to provide the protection? I mean, if there is a threat to an individual's life, you go and ask for protection, and it's not part of your work or your job, then why? Then does the police not say, well, we can protect you, but these are the restrictions as far as it's in the ambit of your job. So, and then I want to know, Chairperson, because it seems there's a distinction between, we have the VIP unit, that's true, but then we also have the presidential protection unit. What do we distinction? I think I know what it is, but I'd like to hear it from the Commissioner. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Khyongu. Are you covered? Honourable Rahman Lakhani.
Yeah, but I think the good job has been done by the VIP. Maybe in a response, maybe the or maybe the acting commissioner on the that has been introduced. Commissioner Stoller can explain. There is the governance or legal governance of the protection, both the VIP, because I think there is a right for request for protection when somebody is like in danger. The person can come forward and ask for that to be implemented. But just explain the if you like the VIP, the normal VIP, as well as the other elite unit. How does that work in terms of law? What does it say? At least so that we all understand clearly about it.
Thank you very much. Honorable Abidja.
Thank you, Chairperson. My questions have been already asked by Honorable Muleba and whoever just by. But what I'd like to indicate to this department is that what we are doing here, we are not on witch hunting. We are doing our job. So you need to feel free to expatiate so that we understand, because an informed leader is an effective leader. And we hear all these things in the media, people as we are moving at crossroads with this negative connotation about this issue. Coming to physical security compliance, we have the performance indicator percentage of national key points evaluated 100% and 11 in brackets. Again, there is something that is mind-boggling with a very negative connotation on the ground that, hey, Uganda, this and this and this, and again, there's money being pumped to Uganda again. So can you just briefly tell us, explain to us so that we have a clear understanding of precisely what it is that is taking place, whether it is correct or it is wrong, so that we are able to cool down the memoya za mayamo de Africa.
Right, just a couple from my side. SAPS decided to report the performance indicators of the four sub-programs of the Protection and Security Service Program separately from the Protection and Security Service PSS and the PPS. This is a significant departure from the norm and should be explained by the department. This way of reporting does not allow for the alignment of the budget allocations that were done per sub-program and performance information reported per main category PSS and PPS. Then I want to also ask again the issue of wellness of the members. I presume that the Free State building has been sorted at this stage. Hopefully they're now in a new building. But I just want to know, in terms of wellness programs for members of this environment, and then again the issue that we raised previously, also of further career opportunities. We know members in this environment stays a long time. They like to be in this environment. But again, what steps are there to ensure if they want to migrate to other divisions of the South African Police Service? Is there the necessary proactive programs to allow for that? Right, members, is Honourable Mulabatsi.
In the past, we heard of the abuse and long working hours of this VIP protection. Has the situation changed? Are they being...
Right, members, that's the first round. Let's go to General Baklana and his team.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I'm glad that this question relating to the former AU is being raised for us to clarify and put the matter into context, contrary to what is circulating out there. The former AU would have been entitled to protection in a capacity as the AU chairperson, and that her protection in the country was provided by the presidential protection unit, informed by the categorization by DERCO, in that as the AU chairperson, she was pitched on the level of president, which requires that her protection is done by the presidential protection unit, because that unit is established to cater for president, former president, deputy president, their spouses, visiting president, and so that is the focus of the presidential protection unit. Ordinarily, a month following the term of office, her protection would have terminated. But that did not happen, because prior to her term ending, there were already threats that were directed at her. Security assessment was done, and that security assessment confirmed the threats that were there, and it required of us to intensify the protection around the AU chairperson. Those threats did not de-escalate beyond the end of a term, and that is why during that month which ordinarily would have terminated, the assessment was done, informed by the latest development, the threat around her, and her protection continued subject to the finalization of the security or the threat assessment. On conclusion of that threat assessment, because she is no more functioning as an AU chairperson, the justification of protection will then be diverted to the PSS in line with the RIMAS, the policy, which provides for protection. I think there is a category there in terms of the RIMAS which talks about ad hoc protection. So the ad hoc protection is protection that is provided to a principal or any person following confirmation of a threat. Now, once you do that confirmation of the threat, it will be pitched on three levels. Is it high? Is it medium? Is it low? And depending on the level of the threat, the determination will be made of what capacity is to be provided to that particular person. So that's where we are in that matter. But Chair, what makes it important, and this is what we were constrained, we could not say it out there. It is not the only person that we are protecting. We are not starting with the protection of someone who is not either a president or a deputy president or a sitting minister. we have provided and we continue to provide protection to people on an ad hoc basis. For example, the current leader of the IFP, Honorable Buthelezi, continues to enjoy protection because of the security assessment that informed that protection. The current Minister of Higher Education, Honorable Blake Nzimande, was provided protection even before he became a minister, informed by the assessment, threat assessment that was done. The current member of parliament, the leader of COPE, Honorable Musiwa Lukota, was provided protection beyond her term as a minister. In that period, when there was the formation of COPE and so on, there were some threats that necessitated the continuation of protection. There are, I can list a number of people that continue to enjoy protection, even if they were not either the sitting president or former president or spouses, informed by the policy which we call the RIMAS, which provides for the ad hoc. If we recall, before Honorable Malema even became a member of parliament, at some point he was receiving protection because of the security assessment and threat that were directed at him. So, Chair, we thought it is important that we get to clarify that position. We will not do anything which is outside the policy. And the explanation, I think Honorable Khunyavad makes an important observation on the continuation of the Presidential Protection Unit protecting the former AU chairperson. That was pending the finalization of that threat assessment, which once it is concluded, there is going to be that handover from the presidential protection. We did not want to do it because it would have been as if there is a cover-up, that immediately when there is noise, then the following day we say PPU hand over to the PSS environment. It would have been a cover-up of some kind, and Honorable Chair, we are not going to do that. We will continue to give the protection where it is necessary, informed by the security assessment and or the threat assessment which is being done. In terms of movement,
sorry, there is the indication of two follow-ups on the response. Three. Honourable Mwila, Honourable Mapija, Honourable Groenewald, and Honourable Flongo.
Thank you, Chairperson. How can you differentiate the threats and see what protection is needed? And how many categories of protection and the differences of each? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mapija. Microphone, Honourable Mapija. Honourable Khunabal, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, with respect towards the Commissioner, that's the answer we received. And I can give you even some more names of private individuals. We know that it is permissible. That's not the problem. Can I ask, Chairperson, that we, what do you call it, the RIMAS, is it a policy or category policy? Can we get a copy of this RIMAS policy, please? not been answered, Jefferson, about the capacity of the members of this protection, the three vehicles, say at least two protectors in each, about six protectors. That's the one issue. How do you determine that criteria? Because according to that, it seems that she's going to be assassinated just if she goes around the corner. With that capacity used to protect her. The second thing is, Chairperson, when do we get the finalization of this assessment? Because now I know it's easy to say, well, we cannot review the threat in itself because that's a security breach in itself. But now we must get the confidence of the people of South Africa. At least we must say, now when are we going to have a final assessment? Because, I mean, this cannot continue forever. The third thing that has not been answered, Chairperson, is, now, if that is such a threat, that the person needs this capacity from the Presidential Protection Unit, surely you must have a policy to say, well, if this threat is of such nature, then you cannot attend public meetings. We cannot give you the protection for that. Okay. Those three issues, please. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Honourable Mshlongu?
No, thanks, General, for your explanation. But I think it lands you into hot waters because you know, it's not a separate matter that the sitting president has actually pounced the name of Dr. Nkosazana as a successor to him. Now, then this thing then puts you right in the square box of the factions of ANC politics, subconsciously or consciously, because I really see no need that you can have a person. It's understandable. There is even no need for us to actually talk about the private security of an individual. Just the question of this presidential unit, which is just even the deputy president of the country, when he is asked, he says, no, I know nothing about this. That is a man who is second in command. Here is the minister just appointed a few days, Minister Mbalula. He goes on there. We took a conscious decision after being informed of the security of this. It hasn't even elaborated to the level that you are giving. And then people of South Africa start boiling to say, here, yeah, we are paying a lot on VIP protection, and here is another abuse of our money. And correctly so, they are justified in that general, because it will never actually cost even a cent to actually then downgrade this to a VIP, because it is still a private protection of the person at that particular level. But for the mere fact that things are going like this, and you've got then this factional politics going on in the country, then you find this whole thing then finding expression within that particular framework and context.
Thank you. The Honourable Ramadakani, you wanted to raise?
No, Chair, I'm just thinking aloud that the National Commissioner speaks about the assessment that is in process. That should be a determining factor going forward. Now, obviously, as a committee, we would be trying to get now at the moment the water out of stone, which is an impossible task. Shouldn't we say that given that the commissioner has given this explanation, that there is a ongoing process of assessment, that we say to the commissioner, maybe he would only brief the committee once that process is complete, just to indicate to us that it's going to be completed in the, there's a period in it to be completed, and then come forward to, in fact, to give us a briefing in terms of that. I'm just wondering, Chair, whether maybe that's not the best approach in dealing with it, given what has been put on the table. And for that, I'm not necessarily suggesting that the National Commissioner is not allowed to answer the question that he's supposed to ask, but I'm just suggesting the process in getting to the finality of the matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bijou.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to proceed with questions. I'm understanding and seconding what Honourable Ramathakam has just said. Thank you.
No, thank you. I think that is a valid proposal. And I think, Commissioner, if he wants to respond to some of the questions, but I think the culmination of the process that must be finalized, the report on that, would be the right route. Otherwise, we're going to stay on the indicator debate as well. So, yeah.
Honourable Chair, it was actually out of respect for this committee that we opted not to say anything in public, that we will be provided this opportunity to explain the situation in this regard. That is why I'm able to provide that detail, which detail was not provided elsewhere. I take the recommendation of the honourable members going forward, and just also to say to honourable Mhlongo and honourable members, it was a transitional period. In actual fact, when we were doing that assessment, at the same time we were setting ourselves up in the PSS environment, because the capacity that was protecting air was in that environment. But I know that we are at an advanced stage to take over that protection from there. Maybe specifically to Honourable Groenewald's questions on the number of vehicles and the number of protectors. As I said, before the end of a term, we had received the outcomes of two security assessments, because we don't do it on our own as CI. Also, the state security was inputting. So, based on those assessments, air protection was increased, and we did not get to the point of scaling down. It's only now that it has been taken over by PSS, that there is the scaling down is realized. The second one relating to the prohibitions or the criteria, Honourable Chair, it's a very difficult one. The principles are very difficult, as in their mobility. All what we do, wherever they go, we ensure that there is adequate protection to avoid a situation that will be very detrimental to the country. So we will the things that are not allowed, they would have been communicated to the principals and said, if you are receiving protection, you are not allowed to utilize the members for this and that. And the members also get, as part of their training and their briefing, they know what are the areas that they are not supposed to go into. But we can, for example, if the principal say, I am going to church, we say, no, we are not able to be part of the church. So it will be, what is our operational arrangement to deal with the situation in that particular instance. Similarly, when it comes to the attendance of mass meetings or rallies, because when it is a mass meeting or a rally, it is not only that protection capacity that is looking after that particular individual. We deploy to manage the situation there, and in the process, the protection services derive value out of the additional deployment that has been realized. And the Riemann document, it's a policy that could be made available, but within the confines, because it's not a document that is being circulated. It remains classified, because then we will have problems. We will be very naked in a way. I think.
I don't want to waste time. This is an important issue. I hear what the commissioner said, and yes, commissioner, that is exactly, it is a difficult one. But you just said, and if I understand you correctly, that for instance, if he goes to church, then he said, no, we're not going to protect. But you see, that's exactly the problem. When you go to church, if you want to go and buy groceries, then it's, you're on your own. So that tells me that the threat is then politically connected. Because when you go to a political rally, yes, then we provide you with 3 vehicles and 6 bodyguards and everything, but not to church. And that is part of the problem.
I think, I don't want to speak on your behalf, but I think it was a response to the question I think one of the members made in terms of the general use of principles and the VIP protectors, you know, that debate, I think, that was the response. Yeah.
Maybe, Chair, let me clarify. I think Honourable Groenewald picked me up, but maybe differently. I'm saying we are not going to be able to say, because you are going to change, we are not going to protect you, because we have that responsibility to be always around the principal.
Thank you, Jay. But can I have, I've asked, can we have just an indication when the protection will move from the PPU to the PSS?
Honourable Chair, by the end of this month, that will have realized, because already we have started creating that enabling capacity in the PSS environment. So before the end of this month, already there would have been movement from PPU to PSS.
Can we go to the other response?
All right, Chair, let General Sithole deal with this matter of the Free State, because he started it, he must finish it. Honourable Chair can recall, he was there in the Free State when the matter was raised, so, and he responded before to it.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I don't think I have good news about this bill. I don't have good news, unfortunately. I think, firstly, we reported last the document got lost from Public Works. There was a change of leadership. Then they started the process from scratch. We worked together with them. Then at some stage, they took the process through the tender. They awarded the tender to the old building, the one that we said we want to vacate. We rejected the outcome of the tender. Then they restarted the process again. At the present moment, I think they reported to us recently that they are at the finalization stage of the last tender process. Then they will then inform us about the building that is awarded. Thank you.
Honourable Romulo Bocci, follow up on that one.
Chairperson,
their documents, they asked us, we gave them the duplicate of the documents. Then they restarted the process. Thank you, Chair.
On Mushlongu, on the same issue.
No, thanks. When we were discussing yesterday or getting a general clarifying the roles, responsibilities and placement, I think VIP was said to be centrally located, isn't it? Which means they are a national a unit. They might exist in the provinces, but they are a national responsibility directly. Now, we went there, in fact, I personally, because I had a very, very, very fragile ill health, I could not even go up there because the lifts were not working. And I even raised a question to the chairperson that, how would you expect these guys to intervene to an urgent security situation in such a rotten building, which is not even rendering facilities which are of paramount importance, like the lift services. Understanding the dangers of this demon of tenders, that it might be having some political issues and influences within the province, from the ambit of the province itself. Is it difficult, General, for you just to take the process and leave? Because even what is the use? We came there as members of parliament. In fact, Chairperson, I must tell you, nobody will ever respect respect us as members of parliament, that we can go and observe seriousness of the situation, only to be taken aback by this narrow policy. I know that I don't want to get involved in the politics of that particular province. Really, it's too horrible for me to get involved. It's too dirty. Really, I don't want. Now, but then the question is, the people who are expected to render such a very vital, and when we went there, Jefferson, I'm sure we were told that even one of the guys died accidentally, and we will never know, because quite a tiring thing moving from the ground floor to that thing, and you move down again, and you are told the MEC is moving, you need to be there within a short space of time, and you are just exhausted by that. Now, I think we need to move out of the comfort zones. Even only if they are bringing computer dynamics, take your people and protect them, because your people are actually looking forward at you. Nobody else can actually rescue you. I don't even understand why there is even this tendering thing, because that's an idea to pay for their province.
Yeah, maybe on this issue, I've got a serious concern, and I mean, General Stoll, it's not your fault, but it shows you, I mean, this is the National Police Management. We've been raising this issue now for the last 2 years, and there's no conclusion, and we can't have that. I mean, we had the incident in PE. At that Park Road police station where the lifts fell down, and how many members still in the hospital. I spoke yesterday about the barracks issue. So if we are serious about addressing the morale of our members, then the top management must address these issues as an urgency. Because it's clearly there's not the urgency with this matter. There's not the urgency with this matter. And I think we will have to call maybe next week Wednesday Public Works and SAPS again on this building issue. I mean, with the DPCI, we had to, after the complaints by General Meza, we called
Public Works and DPCI, and there was a sudden flurry of a task team coming to the fore to address the issues. But acting as a commission, this is core issues. That affects the ability of your people to perform their duties, and especially VIP protection. And from the portfolio committee side, we are really very much disappointed about this. And we will say this in our report as well.
Chair, we agree with you. It's a serious matter. It's one of those matters that we have serious dependencies. We have followed up following the report, and I think once or twice we were before the committee. I think even towards the end of last year, the matter was raised, and that's why I recall General Sithole had to respond to it. As he's correctly saying, you have Public Works who went and awarded a contract to the very same owner of a building that is undesirable. Now, we do not participate in that tender process. It is Public Works' competency. And now they deliver something. All what we can do is to say, this is not what we are looking for, because we are not going to dignify that particular contract and say we are going to remain in this space, and that's why they were pushed. So I can't disagree with the chair in the honourable members expressing disappointment. We're equally disappointed, but it is one of those competencies that is not ours, but the department, and will appreciate that opportunity if the Public Works is being called so that they could be accounting. Similarly, we were accounting on the issue relating to Maisonberg and the related costs. We are the ones that are answering, but decisions are being taken elsewhere in this regard. So we'll continue doing our best, looking after the interest of our members. Similarly, the issue that Honourable Chair raised on the barracks, we know that we continue to be hitting a brick wall in this regard. Maybe at a point when, which we will do, I think the last question we did say maybe tomorrow, we will provide the committee with the list of those 10 priorities per each province, so that when there is engagement with Public Works, we kind of get a commitment on those projects that have been expressed by the provincial commissioners to see to it that they are being undertaken.
Just a moment, Honourable Robert Lacani. Are you finished on this point?
On this particular one, Chair, I'm done.
There
were other matters that are to be responded to. No, Chair, I was just going to say I agree that we should get the Public Works and at least to get the relevant, because the client department is the SEPs. That's the client department that is supposed to play a key role in terms of that. In any case, that building was supposed to have been simply just not be in the equation of a tender. So I think we should get the relevant people. Now, I don't know whether it's a Public Works Bloemfontein regional office or Public Works national. That is right. Because if there is that, then there seems to be some degree of collusion which need to be investigated. There's simply just no one that that building would have passed the test of getting a contract. So and that's quite urgent on that particular matter.
Thank you. Let's go to the other responses. Thank you, General.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. May I ask General Sithole to deal with the two questions relating to physical assessment?
Yeah, thank you, Honourable Chair. I think, Chairperson, the physical security assessment that talks to strategic installations, this operational year, we would do the 50%, which is how it's measured. In the following operational year, will take the other, that is the other half, because we must evaluate them over a period of a year. And the other question, I'm sorry, it was talking, the same applies to the national key points. Is it the one of the international? Yeah. For Inganda, we have conducted our function as protection and security is to conduct physical security assessments in all strategic installations and government interests, which include in Gaza. So we have performed our function. We went to conduct a physical security assessment. I took a physical security assessment. We make recommendations on security installations that must be put in place. And that applies to any building, any strategic installation, and it applies to any national key point. Now, what will then be constituting security expenditure? It will be based on physical security, that is installation. So that particular physical security assessment was done, it was costed, and physical security installations in Gaza were addressed. We did not get involved in any other letters. We didn't get any further requests. So we want to believe that if there's any expenditures that are communicated in the air, they are not informed by physical security assessment, and they may not security expenditure. Thank you.
Chair, the last question that was raised by Honorable Mula, when I spoke about the threat assessment, and I said it's on three levels. I said it's on high, or medium, or low. So depending on the level, the low may not necessarily require police protection. It may be an advice that we provide to the person whose life is under threat or where they were threats, and say it is not confirmed to be on a higher level. Therefore, on your own, you need to take care of your security, either beefing up your surrounding and so on. It is on certain levels that there will be a determination made by us to continue to provide protection. Thanks, Chen. Yeah. I see General Sitole wants to add something.
Just a moment, I see there's a follow-up from Honorable Mabija. Microphone, please, thank you.
I just want to get it right from... I don't know how to address him, Mr. Sitole. General Sitole, when last did you do this physical assessment? Because what I'm talking about is something that has been said during the month of late March, beginning of April. So, did you do it before then, or I just want to get the facts straight, so that even the people outside, they will be understanding what you are saying, because I'm asking questions, trying to assist the grassroots people to understand that you are doing your work correctly. So.
There's also a hand from Honorable Nobel.
Thank you, Chair. On the same issue, Chairperson, can I ask General Sitole to just give us an idea of who is doing this assessment? Because, and I'll tell you why, I'll give you a physical example. When the former leader of the Freedom Front Plus, Dr. Mulder, was a deputy minister, the police went to do an assessment at his private home. It's about an 8-foot wall, a guard house with a TV in, everything. The cost of the protection would have actually been more than the cost of the whole house. It doesn't make sense. Can we get to know how and who is doing this assessment? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Yes, can I just say you refused that he didn't take it?
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yeah. Firstly, on the first question, the physical security assessment was done long before March. We did it long before. But what I would like to explain is also as from the Honorable Member from Nevad has explained, the physical security installation, they usually capital budget. They're not cheap. They're expensive. Normally, some of them, if you conduct it now, it would be required of the owner who must acquire the physical security installation to link it to the MTF cycle implemented over 3 years. Now, it might happen that a report that we conducted, of a physical security assessment we conducted 3 years ago, it's still in the implementation process, that is according to the basis. So that is why we will conduct one. It will depend on the department concerned when do they acquire such a budget. But maybe then a straightforward question, who conducts physical security assessment? Is protection and security. There's a specific trained component, which is government security regulator. And we've got brigadiers and colonels who are fully trained. Specifically, the one of the England, like it was done by Brigadier Adendov. So, the other question, I think the question was escalating to the fact that the Deputy Minister's physical security assessment. Normally, what we do when dignitaries are appointed, we go and brief them and we meet with public works. We also advise on the acquisition of accommodation that will not lead to expensive physical security installations, because it depends where do you choose your resident, where you are located, what are the threats that is around. It also equally depends what is the crime rate, what is the crime situation, what are the incidents around. Then it will then determine the nature and the level of security installations that you would require. So the cost will then be unavoidable. But if it's a private resident, then the dignity concern takes the responsibility. But there is capital that is budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much, General.
No, I think Honorable Grunewald is going to ask a follow-up question. Let me try and preempt that. What we will do, Honorable Chair, is the assessment. And to say, for example, the security wall is not adequate and whatever. And as to what the cost is going to be, it's not our determination. That gets passed on to the public works environment, and that's where the cost issue will be coming. And I understand Honorable Grunewald saying the former deputy minister, as if it was his own residence, where they would say, you are now to do the following. And that which was to be done was going to be costing more than what the actual facility is. I understand that, but I don't want an impression to be created that we make a determination of what the cost should be. It will be for compliance in terms of the level of security that must be here. This and that need to be done. In actual fact, why I knew about what is it that he's asking. The deputy minister is sitting in the same situation, the newly appointed deputy minister, where he says, I do not want to go into an official residence. I already have a house in this vicinity. And if you say my security is not adequate, tell me what it is and to do. And we are in that challenging situation, Honorable Chair.
Can I help the General? He doesn't have to worry about the Deputy Minister. He will shoot to kill.
Honourable Mushlongu, you've got a follow-up on the same issue?
No, Chairperson, what I was just speaking about, I think this question of Inganda and security-related matters, I think maybe someone will have to let it rest, because my understanding of it was that even with the so-called private architecture of the president could not actually then meet, I think then the general will agree with me, could not meet the security requirements of the very same security cluster. Because it was not better. Now, so whatever that follows, it means it's just the water under the bridge. We can come talk until cows come home. There were certain motives that were involved there, and it was done, and then, you know, only God knows about it.
Right, thank you, members. Let's get into the final responses.
Sorry, Jay, can I have the final? I know it's late. Just a final one. On the same one. Just if the assessment has been made, I just want to know, does it recommend, let's say, option one, option two, option three, or is the assessment final?
May I
answer
this,
Tony?
Are there options, sir?
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Yes, let me start by saying yes, there would be that is some options. Like, for instance, ranging from CCTV camera and then to other types of that is installations. And it will also depend on what is the modus operandi demand that is around, but there would be options. But the options will still be costed by the engineers, as the acting national commissioner has explained, that is by public works. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the other responses.
Honorable Chair, there was a question by Honorable Molevati as to whether the situation has improved from the allegations of abuse of the protectors and the long hours. We can't say completely that all those issues have been addressed, but the protectors continue to be paid what is due to them in terms of overtime and so on. There are situations that warrant from them to do longer hours than the normal hours. But we of late did not receive any complaints that indicate that the situation is worse. And Honorable Chair raised an issue about career opportunities. Yes, with the internal promotion processes, we do allocate the post from which that particular environment will benefit. But also the process is as such that they are not locked down in that particular environment. If they would like to move from one area to the other, they are free. They are free to do so. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Rashmat Lakhani.
Small follow-up, Commissioner. When the last time you reported on this particular matter, you would remember that there was a newspaper article. That's a big front page Sunday Times article, allegedly by the VIP protects and unit individuals. Now, I think when you left, we had an impression that there is going to be a process. So the simple question I'm asking, was anybody amongst those who spoke to the media, anybody disciplined? Because the conduct was also another breach of security. So the question is, what happened? Was there any action? Or we could not find who actually spoke to the media about that particular article? Then just to explain it.
Honorable Chair, I'm speaking under correction, but when this matter was in the public domain, it was way before my time. It was during the era of General Pierre.
Ms.
Sithole wants to take ownership of that one.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. I think the disciplinary process on this particular matter was addressed, including the engagement of the VIP concerned. I personally met with the VIP in which we discussed this matter, and we also addressed the members. But over and above that, we introduced a security awareness program for both our members and also the VIPs, because even up to now, we're still meeting with VIPs. Because when you address the members, you also find certain conduct or actions by the VIPs that are actually demoralizing, that is the members. And then in such a case, we communicate this through the security awareness and roadshows with the VIPs. But at the same time, we also get information that is not good about the members themselves. Their conduct, the way they present themselves as far as security is concerned, then we also give it that security awareness. Thank you.
There's one issue outstanding regarding the poor performance indicators reporting. Honourable Chair, I'm going to try to respond based on my understanding of the question that was posed. There is no change in the way that we are reporting in terms of the two entities. The way that it's currently structured is similar to what it was in the previous financial year. The understanding is that if you look at the financial programs that is associated with Program 5, you get VIP protection, you get static protection. The unique situation that we have in SAPS is that we have two entities that are responsible for instance, VIP protection and static protection. The one is protection and security services, and the other one is presidential protection. So basically, if you look at the targets in our plan, it reflects the responsibilities of the two entities, because both of them are responsible for VIP protection, whether it's the protection of security services or presidential protection. They both have that responsibility. Both of them also have responsibility when it comes to national key points. The presidential protection, the national key points are limited to the ones that are relevant to the presidential protection mandate, whilst the protection and security services also have national key points. But that excludes the ones that are being attended to by the presidential protection. So basically, that is to cater for that unique responsibility. What we could have done is to combine it into one single indicator. But due to the fact that we have two different responsibilities or two different entities, it's been split into two. I hope that addressed the question. Thank you, sir.
Members, any other questions? Nothing. Thank you, General Paplana and your team and the members. We will then reconvene tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, V454, and we will then start at 9 o'clock with DPCI. Not the program yet, General Skitter. And then after that, we will deal with the Civilian Secretariat, and then in the afternoon with IPET.
So, Mr. Chair, where is this venue?
V454. We meet at
V-I-D. V, yes. I-I-D, you must say Victor. Not Bravo, Victor.
Thank you.